The subject that I'm going to use tonight is the one talented servant. The one talented servant. I'm going to read the story about this. It's the 25th chapter of Matthew, verses 14 to 29. You think you are all familiar with it, but go through it anyhow. For the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country, who called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods. And unto one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, to every man according to his several ability, and straightway took his journey. Then he that had received the 5 talents went and traded with the same, and made them other 5 talents. And likewise he that had received 2, he also gained other 2. But he that had received 1 went and digged in the earth and hid his Lord's money. After a long time, the Lord of those servants cometh and reckoneth with them. And so he that had received 5 talents came and brought other 5 talents, saying, Lord, thou delivered unto me 5 talents. Behold, I have gained beside them 5 talents more. His Lord said unto him, Well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. He also that had received 2 talents came and said, Lord, thou delivered unto me 2 talents. Behold, I have gained 2 other talents beside them. His Lord said unto him, Well done, good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. Then he which had received the one talent came and said, Lord, I knew thee that thou art an hard man, reaping where thou hast not sown, and gathering where thou hast not strawed. And I was afraid, and went and hid thy talent in the earth. Lo, here thou hast that what is thine. His Lord answered and said unto him, Thou wicked and slothful servant, thou knewest that I reap where I sow not, and gather where I have not strawed. Thou oughtest therefore to have put my money to the exchanges, and then at my coming I would have received mine own with usury. Take therefore the talent from him, and give it to him which had 10 talents. This is a familiar parable that we all have heard. I think probably you have heard many discourses about it. But I haven't anything new to tell you. That's why I used that song, the old, old story. It'll be the same old, old story, but possibly a little bit different in words and so on, but the meaning and the lesson will be the same. It's possible that I can bring out some points that you haven't thought of before. There are 3 questions that come to our minds. The first one is, who is the master of the servants, and who are the servants? I think we realized, all of us, that Jesus was speaking of himself. He was the master, and his followers, true followers, in his footsteps, are the servants that he is speaking about. That would not be only, of course, the disciples that followed him at his first advent, but would also mean all those that have followed the Lord through the age, and especially so at this time. This parable is principally fulfilled in this harvest time. It speaks here about the servants. Are we the servants of the Lord? And I think we will agree that we are. In Romans 6:16, Paul says, we are the servants of those to whom we yield obedience. Paul and his companions were called servants of the Most High God. And in the first chapter and first verse of Romans, Paul calls himself a servant of God. Then when we remember that at our consecration, we promise to obey God and do His bidding, we are therefore His servants too. We obey Him, so we are His servants. And therefore the parable applies to us just as well as to those few that follow the Lord at His first advent. The second question that comes to us is, what is represented by the talents? I've heard quite a few discourses on the talents. No one was alike. And every one of them would go into details and keep on talking till I didn't know which of the things they talked about were the talents, because they didn't follow any special trend of thought, but just sat down talking about the talents. I believe that you'll agree with me, as Brother Russell says here, that the talents are the means, the opportunities, and abilities that we have with which we can serve the Lord and the interests of the kingdom. The means, the opportunities, and abilities. The third question is, and that is the one that we are going to specially talk about, is why is the one talented servant chosen as an illustration of unfaithfulness? Why not the one that had two talents, or the one that had five talents? Why the one that only had one talent? Was it because there was no unfaithfulness among those that we might classify as five talented or two talented servants during this harvest period? In other words, is unfaithfulness only found among the one talented servant? Let's assume that those in the five talented group and those who have two talents, assume that these hold positions of responsibility and that there are or have been teachers in the church during this period. And it is reasonable to think that some of this group would while they had two talents and five talents, that they still would be unfaithful in the use of those talents, whether it be two or five. That is a reasonable conclusion. And I think that Paul means the same thing. He warns us that the devil be after these more than any others, because if they can, the devil can get the leader or elder or someone that holds a good position in the church, if you can get them off the on a tangent, they usually take some others with them. And they know that this has happened in the church in the past, and they know that it's happening in the church today. The history of the truth movement is such that those of us that are older in the truth, that have seen it from way back in Brother Russell's days, we know that many many of those that they could classify as 5 talented servants and 2 talent servants, that they quit, they left, they went into the world again, or they took up some other kind of religion or some other kind of a view, and they left the truth movement. They know that that happened, because we saw it with our own eyes in those days. And so, if this is good reasoning then, that there would be unfaithfulness amongst the 2 and the 5 talented servants, why then didn't God use one of those? Why did he use the 1 talented servant as an example? Now let us remember that it said in the scripture there that the Lord gave these talents to the servants according to their individual ability. That means that there was a difference in their ability to handle that much money. But we'll come to that a little later on. There are at least 2 good reasons for choosing the 1 talented one. Perhaps the main reason is to impress upon all the servants, both the 1 and the 2 and the 5 talented one, to impress on all of them that they are responsible for the talents that they have, be it 1 or 2 or 5. Whether the one that has just 1 talent, whether he has just a few opportunities and privileges, or that it's very little he or she can do, they have at least 1 talent, and that talent must be used, and be used to the honor and glory for the Master. I tried to find out once when I was looking through some things in connection with this discourse, I tried to find out what a talent was worth at the time that at least the time that Brother Russell had something to say about this in the Watchtower. And the best I could find was that a talent was approximately worth $7,000. Well, this master then, you see, gave one individual $35,000, and he gave the other one, 2 talented man, $14,000, and the 1 talented man got $7,000. Now, since they were given this according to their several ability, it indicates that the one that received $35,000, and he had the ability, and he had the business experience and the knowledge and understanding of how to use money to trade with it and earn something, and he could handle $35,000. The Lord knew that, and so he gave him that much money. He knew that was a maximum he could trust him with, but he knew that he would be able to handle that all right. And likewise, with the one that received the 2 talents, the $14,000, if that is right, he didn't have the same business ability and knowledge of business and understanding to handle $35,000, but the master did know that he could possibly take $14,000 and trade with them, which would be on a much smaller scale, and that he would do the right thing. And then the 1 talented man didn't have much ability to handle money, evidently had not much experience, probably was just a common individual that had never had much money in his hands, and he was given $7,000, And as such that he didn't do anything with them. He just took and dug a hole in the ground and buried the money there. It is not for those that only have one talent to feel that because they have so very little that they can neglect that talent that they have. I believe that the reason that the Lord used the one talented man was perhaps for this reason, that most of the Lord's people, perhaps the vast majority of the Lord's people, all during the age and the harvest period, has been of that type, that they only got one talent. Now we have to remember that the Lord is using the five talents as the maximum and the one talent as a minimum, which indicates that at least we have one talent, all of us, that should be used in a master's service one way or another. We have this responsibility. I remember in a certain fairly large class once, I was on a pilgrim trip. I come there, and before I started to speak, one of the elders came to me and asked me if I could say something in my talk about a certain thing that happened. He said, we had the election here recently, he said, and two of our best deacons refused to let their name be voted on. That is, they would not let the name go on the list for those that should be voted on. And he says, if you can say something about that, he says, it will help out. So I used this discourse and brought in about the talent, and told them that they had one talent at least, maybe two talents or five, whatever they had, that they were responsible for the use of it, and that they should not refuse to be voted on. But I said, if you are like the rest of us, that you believe that the Lord's will is shown by the vote of the friends, I said, then you shall let your name on that list, I says, and if when the friends vote, you don't get enough votes, I says, you know the Lord don't want you to be a deacon, but if you do get enough votes, then you know the Lord wants you to be a deacon, I says, and that will be some of the work that you have to do, whether you have 1 talent or 2 talents or 5 talents. You have to use it. And we had quite a discussion after the meeting with these three, and I was glad to see a year later when I come the same way that they were back as deacons, and I know them today. They are elders in the class and serving as good speakers both to the home class and other classes. So I see that because they were willing to go back and use the little talent they had, Lord added to it. The one that had 10 talents, you know, and he had gained 5 talents more, he received the 1 talent that the man didn't use, see the thing. There are many that bury their talents, I believe, in worldly cares and become indifferent in various ways to using it. That's why I used an expression last night about that motto on the stage of the convention, that the Lord said to the prophet, who shall be sent? Who will go for us? And the prophet said, here am I, send me. And the speaker said, he says, we sometimes say, Lord, here am I, send him. And it fits in so well, because I've seen in elections in Chicago sometimes, years ago, not now, I'm not familiar with what they do now, but I've seen them there, we would nominate them for tract distribution, to be a charge of tract distribution, or have a charge of the chairman or deacons or whatever it was, and they'd pop up and say, no, don't ask me to do that. No, I can't do that. And you'll try another one, and he would pop up and say the same thing. And then finally someone said, well, I nominate Brother John. And John got it, and he probably had three jobs before, but he took it. He was willing to use the talents he had. These others didn't, you see. It's one thing to refuse, and there's another thing to refuse because you don't want to. But if you're just afraid and you refuse, the least you can do is to tell the Lord, if you want me, I'll be willing to serve and do the best I can with my talent. I'll let you decide through the vote of the friends. That's the right way to do it. There is not always power. So I believe it's proper for us to say that because so many of us are of that one talented class, it is good for us to think of it that we have one talent and we should use it in some way. Now, we also shall take in consideration the fact that the one talented servant in a parable did nothing criminal. He didn't do anything with that talent or that Lord's money that was criminal. He couldn't be prosecuted for it. The only thing was that instead of using it, he neglected to use it. He didn't steal it. He didn't go out and have a good time as long as the money lasted. He didn't put it into some business and the business failed and they lost all of it. He just deliberately refused to use it and let it stay there on the ground till the Lord came back again. Then the Lord said that he was an unfaithful servant, wicked, unfaithful servant. And his Lord said that the least he could have done, he said, is to put my money in on a savings account in a bank, and I would have got some interest on it when I come back. So you see from that statement that the Lord doesn't expect miracles from us. If we have one talent and we try to do a little bit with it, we do a little, and there may be very little. Now, these that double the master's money, they of course give much more than the interest in the bank would be. But the least that he could have done was to have put it in on a savings account in the bank, and the master would have gotten some interest on that money. So the master was willing to take the least that he could get, so to speak, and still reckon that servant being faithful. But he didn't, you see. And so that's why the master told him that wicked servant. The Apostle Paul points this out to us fairly well in Romans 12:11. He says there, not slothful in business, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. Now this word fervent here should be translated hot. In the Greek it means hot, real hot. And so we also realize that the business that Paul speaks of is not the grocery business or the hardware business or a shoe business or clothing business. It's the Lord's business that Apostle Paul is speaking of. The Lord's business. And he says that we should not be slothful in this business. We should be fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. Lord also, you remember, in his message to the Laodicean church, says this, that I wish thou was either hot or cold. He didn't say that I wish you were at least lukewarm. No, he said, I wish that you were either hot or cold. The Lord evidently don't want anyone to serve him that is lukewarm. But it must be hot, serve them with the spirit that is, so to speak, hot. And you can't do that, you might just about not try. Now, if we begin to feel that the little we do does not amount to much, then remember there are opportunities for service if we are willing to do any of the things that the Lord sends our way. And sometimes we have friends that are looking for something big to do. They like to be a speaker, or they like to be an elder, or they like to be a deacon, and they let the friends know that they think they could handle that. Not very often, but in some of the larger classes, it sometimes pops up. We have an example in the New Testament where Aquila and Priscilla, a married couple, a man and wife, were serving Paul and his companions. And this is mentioned in the Bible briefly, and this couple is mentioned a couple times more, but there is no special reason that I can see why they are mentioned in the Bible there, if it is not for the purpose of indicating to us that if we cannot do much, we can do a little, we can do something for those that possibly have 2 talents or 5 talents and are working with the talents they have, that they can do something to help them, and so on. And it says about Aquila and Priscilla that they served the Apostle Paul and his companion Apollos. In a manner comment from March 8th, Brother Russell says, "When the time for reward shall come, who knows how much of the usefulness of Paul and Apollos may be accredited to some of the humble ones, such as Aquila and Priscilla, who in various ways supported their able brethren in the Lord's work. We don't know what they did for them. They might have taken them in their house for a week and let them rest and perhaps wash their garments and take care of them the best they could. It doesn't say what they did, but it does say that they took care of Paul and his companion Apollos, that they did something for them. And Brother Russell thinks that some of that credit that should go to Paul and Apollos for what they did, accomplished in the service of the Lord, part of that credit should be given to Aquila and Priscilla. Maybe 20% for us out of the 100 will be given to Aquila and Priscilla because they helped their able brethren, I think. They have another example in the 17th chapter, Exodus. And this deals with the time that Israel was on a journey from Egypt up to the promised land. And they came to that section of the land there where the Amalekites had the rule. And when Israel asked permission to go through their land, instead of having to go way around and spend a lot of time traveling, they asked if they could go through that land, and they refused them, and would not let them go through. And remember that Moses asked God what they should do, and God said, "You go on, go through." He said, "I will be with you. If it comes to war, I'll be with you." And so happened that they had to go to war with the Amalekites to force their way through, and the Amalekites, in the first part of the battle, chased the Israelites back. And so they came back and complained to Moses. Moses again went to God and he told God about it. What should he do now? And God said that, Moses, he says, you go up on that high ground there and you stand up there, he says, and you hold your arms up, he says, like this. And as long as you hold your arms up, he says, I'll see to it that Israel will win. Moses did so, but you try it some morning, hold them up there for 10 minutes, and you'll see what happens. After a while, you just calm down. You can't hold on. That's impossible. And finally, his hands come down. Then the Amalekites, while Israel was winning, when he was up there holding hands up, as soon as they let him down, the Amalekites chased Israel back again. Moses again went to God, and God said, all right, he said, you'll take with you Aaron, your brother. And this was while Aaron was just one of the Israelites. He was not yet high priest or anything. He says, you take Aaron with you and a man by name of Hur, and you go up on that hill again, he says, and you roll a stone over, he says, and you sit on that stone, and you hold your arms up, he says. Well, you can imagine if I sat down this low and I held my arms up, God said that Aaron shall stand on one side and Hur on the other side and hold your arms. They could stand there and hold Moses' arms, you see, standing up. Forever, you know, as long as necessary. Because Moses was sitting down here and his arms only come up this far. So then Israel won. They went through and slew the Amalekites and took the land and went on. There again you have the same lesson that those that don't have much ability and don't have much to do with, they can in certain cases help their abler brethren and sustain them and help them and direct them, even if it's nothing else but a pat on the back or tell them that they wish they could do more for them or so. We have also another example that I'll try to bring up. I think I have time for that. The other example is about Rahab. Now in the King James version of the Bible, Rahab is pictured as a harlot. This is absolutely wrong. It's entirely wrong description of her. She had an inn in England, but in England, in all English, called an inn is a small hotel. That's what she had. You know, there in Jericho, they had that walled city, and they had certain openings, certain gates there that were closed, doors are closed at night time. But it was also open in the daytime so that the traveling public that come there with the camels and goods on the camel's back and come inside, there was a hotel they could stop and get food for the camels and get shelter themselves and place to sleep and something to eat. That's what she was doing. And that's the same principle as today. We have railroad stations, we have bus stations, downtown, usually not too far away from the hotels, because the traveling public who want to go to the hotel isn't too far to go. And it was the same principle back there. Now, when these two spies were in there and looking over the ground to see what Joshua would have to do to win this battle, take the city, some way or another, the authorities found out that these spies were there, and so they come hunting for him, and they found out too that they were after him, so they come into this lady that had this hotel and asked if she could in some way hide them, and she said she could. She would hide them up on the roof, and she did so. Under some piles of straw that was up there. It doesn't say why the straw was there, but she buried them underneath that straw. And then when she asked them, or told them that she would ask a favor, and that favor was that when they took the city, which she says, I'm sure you will do, because we have heard about your God, she says, that give you the victory over all the kings all the way up from Egypt to here. And I know, she says, that you will take this city. And all I ask is that you'll spare me and my house, she says, my family, my house. If you will do that, I'll hide you. And they promised her that. And so the police or whatever it was came and asked if she had seen these spies. And she told what we today call a white lie. She just said that the last I saw them, she says, they were going out of this gate as fast as they could, and if you hurry up, says, you may be able to catch them. not too far away. And then after they went, she let them over the wall, let the rope down, and told them to hurry up and get down to Jordan and get over to where Israel was camped on the other side. And the record says that when they took Jericho and slew all the people and killed all the animals and everything, that she and her house, her family, was saved and spared. And now there's another example of the one that they could classify as the one talented one, took care of these that had greater work to do and helped them so they could accomplish their mission. Now there's some, of course, that say that I feel so small, I don't know if I even have one talent. Well, be assured that as long as the Lord used the one talent as the minimum, that we all have one talent that we can use. He wouldn't have accepted our consecration if it hadn't been sure that we could make our calling and election sure that we had one talent. Brother Russell, in one article, speaks this way. He says that if you have a strong desire to do some specific thing for the Lord and the truth, and you lack courage when the opportunity comes to you, or if no opportunity seems to come your way, he says, why not go to the Lord, ask for it, ask the Lord to help you. Tell him you like to do something, and you don't know just what you can use or what opportunity will be, but ask the Lord to bring some opportunity to you so that you can have some part in it. And the reason for this, what Russell says, is that Paul says in Philippians 4:19, my God shall supply all your needs according to his riches and glory by Christ Jesus. Paul says that God will supply all our needs. So if we need courage, as we had a testimony meeting, if we need courage, why not ask the Lord to help you to have courage so that you can do what you think he wants you to do. If you have no zeal, Brother Russell says this, I'm quoting Brother Russell now, if you have no zeal, no desire to do anything, pray for it. But he says, if you have zeal, but you think you lack ability, he says, pray for it. Then he says, if you have both zeal and ability, but you lack opportunity, nothing seems to come your way so that you have opportunity, he says, pray for it. But, now here comes that big word, but he says, in the meantime, well, you're waiting for the opportunity to come. In the meantime, he says, use the smallest and the humblest that comes your way. Both the phrases are tackled, no matter how little it is and how humble you have to be to use it, just take it. I think we have time for just a little bit more. It's a great honor to serve the Lord. In 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 30, we have this statement, and this is the prophet speaking for God. He says, them that honor me, I'll honor. Now, we are apt to think that, well, the Lord has honored me already with let me have the truth. Now, what else will he do? Well, if we honor the Lord by using the truth, by letting our light shine as best we can and use the one talent we have, then, you see, if we serve faithfully, then God will honor us. And he will do it by giving us more opportunities, you see, helping us to do more. As we are faithful in little things, first thing in order to get some greater opportunities. And it may develop and develop and develop till it comes to be quite a good deal. I've seen friends in the congregations in Chicago where they didn't think they could do anything. They were hardly willing to be voted on for a deacon. They didn't think they could do that even. But they finally gave in and they elected a deacon, and then they worked faithfully at the deaconship. And then after a while, finally the friends feel that, well, that brother is a very good deacon. He seems to know and understand. He answers all the questions right. And I think we ought to elect him an elder. So they elect an elder, see. And then later on they may be elected to be a public speaker, to speak on the platform to the public and so on. You don't know. God will honor us one way or another by evidently giving us a little more work to do and a little more glory in it, in a certain sense that did a little better work and a little more that we can feel that we can do that we didn't think we could do. And that way I think that the Lord gradually elevates an individual to more and more work. Again, we remember that the one that had 10 talents received the 1 talent that the man didn't use, that the servant didn't use, indicating that God will add to if we are faithful in using what little we have. Now, if you feel you belong in the 1 talented servant, it's a group, don't be discouraged. Whatever you do, don't get discouraged because you only have 1 talent. Everybody else, perhaps round about, has 1 talent too. But be glad that you have 1 talent. Be glad that the Lord saw that you had 1 talent and that you have that privilege to use it when He gives you an opportunity. That you have at least that 1 talent. And remember that your 1 talent can be of great use in connection with some that have 2 or 5 talents. And remember also that you alone are responsible for your talent. I am responsible for my talent, and you are responsible for your talent. I have nothing to do with your responsibility, you have nothing to do with mine. But we can help each other with using the talent as we think is necessary and wise for to do. So that is the story about the 1 talented servant. He was a wicked and slothful servant just because he didn't use it. That all the wrong was that he didn't use it. So we don't want to be that way, do we? That's all.